From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on your ballot when you go to vote on Tuesday, November 7th. It's a question that only comes up once every 20 years. Would you like to see New York State hold a constitutional convention? Supporters say this is the chance to change the culture of corruption in Albany as just one positive, a golden opportunity to create new rules and get tough. Opponents worry that we would be opening not just a constitution, but a Pandora's box of potential unintended consequences, harm to workers, lost pensions, risk to the environment. This hour, we're bringing together voices on both sides. We invite your comments and questions. The phone is already ringing. And the good news here is all four guests that we have in studio with us, as best I can tell, and I mean this very sincerely, I think they argue in good faith. I think they really believe in their cause. As the host of this program, I have no clue where I am for November 7th, so I'm really looking forward to the conversation, and we're going to do it in a nice, civil way here, starting with Jesse Lenny, upstate regional political director of the Working Families Party, and a firm no. Jesse, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Also a firm no is Kim Chesko. She's a public school teacher and a resident of Irondequoit. Kim, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also here is Wes Renfro, associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College. He's in the yes camp. Nice to see you, Wes. And also here is Neil Jasek, chairman of the Government Reform Committee of the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. Also a firm yes. Welcome back to the program, Neil. Our listeners have already asked this morning, so just clarify, where on the ballot are we going to see this question? Where are they going to physically see it?
It is on the back of the ballot, along with two other specific amendments to the Constitution. So you will have to turn the ballot over and cast your vote one way or the other. And it is not true that if you miss it, it will be counted as a no.
Yeah, if you don't vote, you don't vote. It is not a default yes or no. You have to actually vote yes or no for it to be counted as yes or no. So let's get that out of the way. There you go. It's going to be on the back of the ballot. There should be a language right there on the ballot to remind you it's a dual-sided ballot. And my guess is the elections workers, who are wonderful people, will probably let you know as well. But let's go around the table, and I promise our guests will have plenty of time to respond to what they hear. But I'd like to just start with some opening comments from all of our guests. And Kim, I'll start with you. You are a no. Why?
I'm a no because of many reasons. I could give you the long list or the short list, but I guess in interest of time, I'll give you the short list right now. Right now, New York can't afford to put the money into the boondoggle that the Constitutional Convention is going to be. This is going to be a politician's convention, and then we're really taking a machete to something we should be taking a scalpel to. We're opening up everything so that any protections that we have right now could be removed from our Constitution, and I don't think that's right for the people of New York.
You say it would be a politician's convention. Why do you put it that way?
We can really only use the last politician's convention as our evidence for this. In 1967, when we had our last convention, 4 out of 5 of the delegates were politicians, and every politician who ran as delegate was a delegate. This is not going to be a people's convention. I think that a lot of people think that this is a way for regular people to get there and do things, but the evidence shows us that it's not.
Okay, so what Kim is talking about there is, so if you don't know the process, you might think, well, if we vote yes on a constitutional convention, then it's sort of this public free-for-all, and we'll have all these debates, but we have to elect delegates, I think just over 200, Jesse Lenny? 204. And so we would be electing delegates. And what Kim is pointing out is that historically, that typically are people who already work in Albany. And our guests are all going to, because Wes is already shaking his head on this one. He's ready to jump on this. But that is a common criticism you hear, that the concerns of the no's is the delegates would just be largely the people who are already working in Albany. They don't have incentive to change, and that would be a waste of time and money. Jesse Lenny, you are a no. Why?
I just agree with everything that's been said so far. There's a lot at risk. There's a lot of rights and benefits that are enshrined in the Constitution that if we open it up for the free-for-all, as you said, we could lose a lot.
An example.
Specifically, Article 14 that protects the park, the Adirondack Park, is what I'm most worried about. You'll also see in the back of the ballot, there's another proposition to change that a little bit, because that proposition has been vetted through multiple sessions of the legislature, and now voters have weeks and weeks and months to decide whether they want to do it. In a convention, We don't have any idea what they're going to do. They could open it all up. They could delete it. They could rewrite it completely, and we may not have anywhere near that amount of time to make a decision on what they do.
Any other concerns about what could be lost? And you represent the Working Families Party for workers. What are you concerned about, if anything, Jesse?
I guess my self-interest is that we do politics for a living, and our members do politics as their sort of their goal to win social justice through public policy. And there are a lot of good people running for office next year. And I feel like if we have to elect another 204 people to defend the Constitution, it will take very limited resources. I mean, even the biggest contributors on the progressive side are outspent 15-20 to 1 by corporations in real estate. And, you know, I had the pleasure of going to a political forum for congressional candidates this past weekend. Very earnest people, regular, everyday people want to run for Congress. They're going to have an incredibly uphill battle. And if the few folks on our side that have any resources are locked in a struggle, life and death struggle, to protect us from, like, the ne'er-do-well delegates who are going to run, I feel like we're going to miss an opportunity to put some good people in office.
Neil Jasek is a yes for a constitutional convention. He's chairman of the Government Reform Committee of the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. You are a yes. Why, Neil?
Well, I've spent 30-odd years in government service in New York State, both the regional and county level. And I've seen firsthand how parts of the Constitution do affect the quality of legislative leadership, which in turn affects the quality of executive offices that carry out those policies, and that I think there's a lot that can be improved. I am amazed at the future, the ability of these folks to see the future and know exactly who's going to get elected to the convention. There are many good things that can happen from a convention, just as there are many bad things that can happen from a convention. The whole question turns on how much faith we have and our ability to elect delegates to the convention that are going to do the right thing. The funny thing is, all of us around the table, both the pros and the cons, would like to see the same things. They would like to see strong ethics in government. They would like to see anti-corruption measures. They would like to see truly independent redistricting. They would like to see better ballot access for people, both as voters and as candidates. And I could go on and on and on. The main thing that separates us is simply their fear that somehow we are unable to elect delegates to do the right thing. And my position is simply, let's try it.
All right. I'm going to let Wes jump in, too. And I know Kim and is going to want to respond. The phone's ringing, but we're going to let everyone kind of get their first statements in. Wes Renfro, go ahead.
Constitutions serve a function. They are supposed to reflect the polities of the citizens that they represent, and they are not supposed to be unchanging. New York State, in many fundamental ways, is not what it was in 1937 or 1938. And I think that the most appropriate way to view this question is the position of, are we interested in good governance, or are we interested in preserving the status quo for interest groups both on the left and on the right? And I'm a scholar, so, you know, I want to bring up a little bit of the empirics. If you survey all of the constitutional conventions that have occurred in the United States, I'm hard-pressed to think of a single example of a regressive state constitution. It is phenomenally difficult for folks to take away fundamental rights. And furthermore, I'd also add that given the composition of the electorate of New York State, some of the fears, particularly from folks on the progressive end of the spectrum, seem pretty ill-founded to me. And one thing that I think that is missing from the conversation, and I think that this is deliberate by some of the opponents, is that it's important to remember that any proposed amendment or emendation to the state constitution will have to be ratified by the voters of the state. And so I think that some of the claims that are being ginned up are just not really supported by a ton of evidence. And as a final point, and this is just a direct rebuttal to the comment about the 1967 constitution, it depends on how we define politicians. If we actually think about current office holders in 1967, it's something like 15 or 18 of the 204 7%. Were concurrently serving. The vast majority of the other folks were public servants. Many of those were folks who had been retired. And so I think it's a little bit of linguistic sleight of hand to say that 4 out of 5 delegates were politicians.
Okay, but this time around, do you not think that we would see a number, a strong number, a big number of current serving politicians in Albany trying to become delegates? You really don't think so?
It is certainly possible, and
because they're allowed to. The law says they can.
They certainly can, and I don't think that any of us know who will run. But I guess I would encourage folks to think about the question in the following terms. How much faith do we have in our fellow citizens? Are they willing and interested and able to either serve or to elect folks?
Or do they have the time, Wes? That's another issue that comes up a lot from the no crowd. They say, we talk about, and Neil, I'll direct this to you, and then I'm going to let Kim and Jesse jump in. But I hear from the no crowd, yes, it's idealistic to think that the quote-unquote average citizen, however we define that, would say, yes, sign me up, I'm going to run, I'm going to be a delegate, I'm going to do this. And then they start looking at the time commitment. They go, oh, well, I've got kids, or I've got a job, or I've got, and all of a sudden that's not an option for them. Well, who has the time? Maybe, yes, retired public servants, maybe people who are retired, or maybe people already serving in Albany. And that's why the concern is you're just going to end up with a constitutional convention that is largely leaders in Albany now, double dipping, getting paid again, and not incentivized to actually make significant changes. Neil?
Well, the time issue, first of all, they're going to get paid. So most of the folks that might have to give up a year of their current activities are going to be
And then they're going back to the same job? I mean, I like this job.
No,
I'm not giving it up for a year.
No, I agree that I believe the majority of the folks that will run for run and get elected mm-hmm. are not necessarily day-to-day politicians that are actually serving today in the legislature or whatever. But they are going to be, for the most part, political junkies. They're going to be people that care about governance. They're going to be people that have specific objectives in terms of the kinds of things, the way the Constitution can improve, the way government can work in New York State. And the average citizen, I agree, is not going to be interested in spending time dealing with that. But that's no problem. That's what a representative government is about. I believe that we can find in every senatorial district at least three people that have the time and the energy and the knowledge and the interest to make significant improvements to the state constitution. And I believe that a well-funded campaign of people to get behind them and see that they get on the ballot and get elected to the Constitution can succeed. Not in every one of the 60-odd senatorial districts, but certainly in enough of them to make a significant impact on the composition of the convention.
All right, Kim, go ahead.
I think I would pose the question to Neil. Neil, if you were running for delegate and you were running against Rich Funky, mm-hmm. who would win? And I think we can all probably, regardless of our feelings about Rich Funky is better funded. He has more name recognition than you do. And people might look at it and say, well, he knows what he's doing already because he's already there. And I think the question here is, who would win if some no-name Joe Schmo off the street like me or you was running, as opposed to someone who people already know their name and can say, oh, I know this name? I mean, not all the people who are listening to this show are interested in the Constitutional Convention. They're thinking about it. They care about this. But in a year, when we're electing delegates, the people who cared will have stopped caring, and they will pick the name that looks most familiar on the ballot. And that's going to be a politician who's running.
Wes. I know Wes is dying to jump in on that.
Yeah, and I guess I would just say that that's why we have representative government. And what I hear from opponents to the Constitutional Convention is a fundamental mistrust of the citizens. And if, for example, the citizens in that district choose to elect a current member of the legislature, if they want Funky to be their person, then so be it. That is by design why we have elections. And furthermore, any suggestion or any improvement or any amendment to the state constitution will then again have to be ratified on the back end by voters. And so I guess I'm a little skeptical of this whole argument. And I do think that we live in a time in which, you know, distrust of government is extraordinarily high. And I think the opponents are contributing to that because they're suggesting that our fellow citizens don't have the intellectual or moral capacity to elect good representatives.
Well, I want to jump in and say that what Wes is implying that we need to do, change the change the Constitution is something that we can already do through the amendment process for free without paying a second salary to people who are delegates.
That's a wholly fallacious argument. That state legislature will never pick up any amendment to the Constitution.
There's two amendments on the on the back of the ballot.
Yes, but they do not challenge the power of a legislator. And
legislators are going to challenge their power, then you're very misinformed.
All right, hold on. Wait. No, the moderator's got the floor here. Moderator's got the floor.
I know Jesse, you're right.
Jesse's been waiting the longest, but before I go to Jesse, I do want to ask one question to Kim, which is this here. You're saying we have the power to change already. We don't need to open this up with the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And we can do that in various ways. What the yes side points out is every year, I think for the last 5 years, I've heard a declaration, they almost break their arms patting themselves on the back with the ethics reform that they ostensibly passed, even though we still have, I think what most good government watchdog groups would say are ethics problems in this state. And so they are not incentivized to actually make the kind of changes, barring being forced to do so. So I think what Neil and Wes and the yes folks are saying are, we all want that. You think we can get that currently, but they're not incentivized to do it. We're going to have to force them.
I hear that argument and I understand it. And my answer to that is maybe it's time then for the people who want ethics reform to run for office.
To run for actual office.
To run for delegate, actual office.
To run
maybe
for
it's
office.
Time for us to be putting our money into that. Instead of running for a one-time constitutional convention that happens every 20 years, let's get the people who want ethics reform in those seats every day of the entire legislative year.
Jesse,
I mean, to that, just quickly on that point, we're looking for one person to run against Senator Funky. If anyone out there is interested, no offense, Senator. And that's going to be a struggle. And what I noticed in doing my research is that the folks on the pro side don't do politics. They don't fund elections. They don't recruit candidates. So when someone on the pro side says, I don't think there'll be any problem finding 204 people to run for office, it's my job to find one person to run against Rich Funky. And I may very well fail, like we did last time. We had no one that was willing to run against Rich Funky. So, and I would just challenge the notion that we don't have faith in our fellow citizens. I have the utmost faith in citizens. I don't have faith in political junkies. As Neil said, and I agree, political junkies, it will most likely be politicians or retired politicians. That's a distinction without a difference. But I don't have faith in them. I have faith in citizens who I'm going to meet with one this afternoon about running for office. And they're going to talk to me about time away from their kids, 6 months in Albany. And what am I going to say? Am I going to say they should leave their kids? It's a very difficult thing to run for office, and it's not very rewarding. And I think Neil laid out, the other thing I would agree with Neil is the difference here is our faith in our ability to recruit 204 candidates and win 63 elections, or most of them, is the distinction in this race. We do this every single year. So I would just say, like, I have faith in the no folks because we're actually trying to win some elections. And I would like to just win two or three next year. If we have to win 32 or 103 in order to protect the Constitution, and yes, we will need to find three people. I think that's very difficult, and I don't have faith that we can do it. And it will need to be well-funded. We are outspent 15-20 to 1. And the people who do contribute to progressive candidates.
By whom?
By corporations, by real estate LLCs. If you are a real estate a businessman in New York City, you can create hundreds of LLCs that can all max contribute to someone who's willing to stop New York City from protecting tenants. So the system is set up in a way that makes it very difficult for us to win even a handful of elections, to put us in a situation where we then have to defend 63 districts. I mean, the candidates for state government, most of them are incumbents who win every time, still spend $260 million plus every year.
What's the incumbent reelection rate in this state?
90%.
Almost 90%.
It's always been 90-91%, right?
Right.
So Neil, I think everybody wants the same kind of things here, but Jesse is doubting that you can actually win these elections against if it's for delegates because he says he can't win elections every single year. Forget delegates.
I can win some.
Sorry, Jesse. He's saying many he can, and sometimes
204.
But sometimes, but sometimes can't even get candidates.
Yeah, I doubt that. You know, I doubt that any of us around the table can, with any accuracy, predict what would happen in an election for delegates.
But you don't think it's predictive that every year they struggle to get candidates?
No. Funky may win running for the Senate. I'm not sure he is necessarily a shoo-in to run as a delegate. I'm not sure he's a shoo-in to be even be nominated by the Republicans, who will actually put up, you know, three candidates for convention, as well as the Democrats, as well as possibly even the Working Families Party, as well as possibly some independent people to go out there. There are people across this state who care very much about the potential of what a constitutional convention can do. And there are people across this state who are absolutely fed up with continuing with business as it's currently conducted. And they are willing to put in the time and effort to both recruit candidates, brand them so that we know who they are. People are not going to choose between Funky and me, between the name Jacek and Funky. They're going to choose us because of the brand that we carry. And he'll be running if he runs, he'll be running as a Republican. If there's a reformer, they'll be running as somebody with a specific constitutional reform brand on them. And people will know what they stand for. So it is definitely possible to run a winning campaign in terms of getting enough delegates elected that can make a significant difference.
One question, though, Neil, why not then run, whether it's Neil Jacek or anybody else who would be branded a constitutional reformer, why not just run in actual elections for state office?
I mean, now they should do that too, but
okay.
But I don't think any of us can foresee the kind of turnover at the rate that that would take place in our lifetime that would make the difference that's necessary to do it.
Wes Renfro.
So just 2 points. You know, in a regular election, it's a winner take all, and so in each district we're only sending one delegate, and so we're going to be sending three delegates if this happens, for every Senate district. And so I do think that opens up some new opportunities for folks who probably couldn't or wouldn't be elected in a regular legislative election. But what I haven't heard in this conversation, and I think this is a really important point, I think it's missing from the entire discussion across the state about the Constitutional Convention, is that even if this thing goes off the rails and we elect a bunch of terrible delegates and they come up with self-serving things that don't reflect the interests and values of the voters of the state of New York, the voters in the state of New York will have to ratify any changes to the Constitution. And if history is a guide, if we look at 1967, they rejected it wholesale because it was a simple up or down vote. And so when I say that I think that folks are not giving folks proper credit for being intelligent voters, it's that particular piece that I'm talking about. I'm less concerned about who makes it there. I'm very interested in how voters will behave on the other side.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah. So here's what we're going to do. If you're just joining us, we're obviously talking about a constitutional convention. We're voting on Election Day on the back of your ballot, and we've got two folks from the No Camp, two from the Yes Camp in studio. Got a lot of phone calls and emails to work through, so in our second half hour, we're going to try to respond to as many of your questions and comments as possible. I'm going to give each side a chance to make one more comment. We'll take a break, and then it's all phone calls and listener comments, and we'll continue the joust. Go ahead, Jesse Lynn.
I just want to address the ratification. That should give people no comfort that there's a ratification, and the history shouldn't even, where voters have mostly voted all of this down. We've spent all this money to come up with these amendments. Most of them have been voted down, total waste of money in the past. But they should take no comfort in it, because now I hope everybody turns the ballot over and votes in this, and they hope they vote no. But if you look at the turnout of people that flipped the ballot over, it's abysmal. And second of all, that's another election in 2019, depending on how long they take. If they take 3 years and get paid for 3 years, we don't know when that ratification election may be. And my same issue will apply, where the few advocates, mostly against this, who fund elections, who contribute to progressive causes, are going to have to fight against propositions that will hurt workers, that will hurt the park, instead of helping people get elected for mayor, for county ledge, for county. It's the same. We're going to spend $50 to $100 million on the convention. We're going to spend $100 million on the delegate elections, and then we're going to have to spend another $20 to $50 million to fight the ratification of crappy amendments that come out of this thing. So it's just
there's
an incredible
a lot of presumptions
waste of
there, Jesse.
I mean, I do this for a living. That's how much elections cost. If you do one mailer to a Senate district, it's $40,000. One single mailer. That's if people read it. This is not magic. This is just money.
I'm here to tell you, people don't read those mailers.
They don't read the mail. Okay. So how do you? So if you knock on
they
every
burn,
door, there's 320,000 people in the Senate district. You don't have time to knock on all those doors. And unlike the propositions that are on the back of the ballot this year, where we had two cycles to evaluate them, to lobby, and now we have a whole year to evaluate whether we're going to vote yes, we will have 6 weeks to evaluate everything that comes out of the convention. 6 weeks.
Okay. Neil, I got to let you jump in, and then I've got to get a break. Everyone's going to have more time here. Go ahead, Neil.
Just first of all, the delegates get paid $79,000 flat, period, even if the convention goes on for 5 years. That's all they're going to get. So
that's not all that enticing to me to run as a delegate.
Right.
Good point.
But actually, what I hear just is simple defeatism. It says we're not even going to try. It's going to be too much trouble. The odds are stacked against us. Look, I know there will be people out there pouring in money for the special interest, but I think there is certainly enough interest right now in this time with all the stuff that is going on nationally that people are more in tune than ever to try to correct the kinds of things they see as failures in their government.
Like Chris on Twitter, he says, three delegate seats will be open for Funky's district. He may win one. I'm willing to run for one of the other two, and a lot of other people will as well.
And
Kim,
a
short comment, and then we got to get a break. Yeah. Go ahead.
Funky isn't the only political person who's going to run for that seat. I mean, I brought up his name because it came to my mind
first.
But there's multiple assembly people in that area. And then there's also lobbyists who are going to be running for these places in the Senate, the Senate district that they're in. I also want to point out that I think one of the things that has gotten lost a little bit here is that just a few weeks ago, Governor Cuomo came out and said, we're going to have a $4 billion budget shortfall this year. And now we're talking about spending more money that we don't have to spend because we already have a process. I'm a teacher, and I know that right now we're already underfunded in our public schools. We can't afford to spend money on something we don't have to spend it on when we really need that money going to public services like schools, our firefighters, our police men and women. That's where we really need to be spending this money instead.
All right. I have to get a break in, and then I have to get some listener comments in. We're talking constitutional convention with, you just heard Kim Cheska, who is a public school teacher and a resident of Irondequoit. She's alongside Jesse Lenny, the upstate regional political director of the Working Families Party. They're in the no camp. Wes Renfro is associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College. Neil Jasek, chairman of the Government Reform Committee of the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. They're in the yes camp. A lot of your comments coming on the other side of this break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, what can we all do to help create solutions for climate change? And I'm talking about at a very micro level, at home, during your day-to-day life. How often do you think about climate change? And how much should we think about climate? What about at the medium level, sort of the state, local levels, the federal level policy? What ought we know about possible solutions? We'll discuss it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Elizabeth writes to us and says, we've got a legislative process that is specifically designed to make the Constitution amendable. We can make changes as we need to adapt to changing issues, problems, and cultural forces. Attempts to start from scratch, so to speak, are generally ideologically motivated crusades from powers that are unhappy with the current system and wish to rewrite it in their own image, as opposed to respecting the legislative process. Patrick writes, 20 years ago when I first learned about the possibility of a New York State Constitutional Convention, I thought, of course, nothing happened then. Now I'm seeing lobbying for the no group, no vote from groups I support, teachers, environmentalists, and the newly christened Out Alliance, but I still feel we should say yes and revisit the document. The main point is not about who are the delegates or how much does it cost, but that the voters will have the final say on any suggestions. New Yorkers have squandered money for lesser causes. That is from Patrick. So he's in the yes camp. David in Pittsburgh, first on the phone. Go ahead, David.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Nobody's mentioned the fact that the Senate, New York State Senate, is quite badly gerrymandered. 50% of the Senate, roughly, is Republican, and I think only about 30% of the electorate is Republican. The Assembly is a little bit more representative of the people, but that's irrelevant to the selection process. The other thing we're not tending not to mention, and that is that voter turnout in non-presidential election years in New York State, I think, can only be described as terrible. And so when it comes to ratifying this convention, there's a pretty decent chance that the vote for ratification will have an extremely low turnout. And one of the risks of low turnout is the fact that special interest money can have a very large and disproportionate effect, so that the end result is not really representative of the people of New York State, and not even particularly representative of the registered voters of New York State.
All right, David, thank you for the phone call. That's a sentiment that I'm hearing a lot, Wes Renfro, as a professor and a scholar in political science here. A lot of people are saying turnout's already low. This ain't going to be representative anyway. What do you say to that?
So it's probably true that it will be low. I think there's a couple important things to keep in mind, that we've never seen a constitutional convention in any state be regressive and take away rights from folks. I guess I would also
How many have we seen, by the way?
It's in the hundreds over course. Right. I think hundreds over the course of the Republic. We've got 50 states.
Anything recently? Doesn't seem like, I don't know. I don't follow constitutional conventions.
I would have to double check.
Okay.
But certainly, it's going to be low. But I think that there's a fundamental intellectual question about what's going on here. If we have an election and we open it to the citizens of New York and they choose to stay at home, I think that fundamentally they bear the responsibility. This is a good process. It provides a way for citizens to get involved. It's probably going to be low turnout. But I think that we should remember that it's unlikely that we're going to see regressive things coming out of this process.
Okay. Jesse and Kim, why are you not sort of latching onto that history as a guide kind of lesson from the professor?
I think people need to remember that Citizens United happened since those conventions. And we are seeing unprecedented levels of money coming into elections, mostly negative, mostly dark, that no one knows who's paying for it. So, you know, if we could get the one truck driver or school teacher to run for delegate, they're going to be hit with someone's going to go through their internet. I don't want to scare people from doing it, but it's going to be bad. I know. I don't want to scare people from doing it.
Hold on. The subject of dark money. I'm going to take a call and I'll let Wes jump in there. But Maggie in Rochester has a comment on exactly that subject. Go ahead, Maggie.
Yes. Hi. I'm currently reading the book by Jane Mayer, Dark Money. And she talks exactly about this. Since the Supreme Court ruled in 2010 about the campaign finance, there is so much money now, pooled in together. And it's not like it was in 1967. So you're going to have groups advocating if we get to this point, and they're going to call themselves things like New Yorkers for Prosperity or something like that. And you say, oh, that sounds like a nice group. I'm for prosperity. But it's the Koch brothers and these other millionaires who want to get into our Constitution and change everything to benefit the billionaires and the corporations.
Now, Maggie, thank you for the phone call. It was the great David Rakoff and the late David Rakoff who said that every group has a lovely name, like the Basket of Puppies Foundation, but you should really look deeper in terms of who funds them and what their goals are. Wes, what concerns about that?
Yes, I really need to strap on my social science hat here. What has happened in the post-Citizens era is that there has been a dramatic increase in the amount of money. There's frankly not much evidence to support the notion that the increase in the amounts of money is swaying individual elections. It's basically a wash because very few interest groups, and there are no special interest groups, they're fundamentally only interest groups. Interest groups are not having, across the spectrum, are not having a hard time raising money. And I think that there's some amount of rich irony that the folks who are advocating for a no vote on the Constitutional Convention are citing money as a reason to be opposed to it, given that they are essentially a broad-based collection of interest groups who have outspent the yes crowd by a margin of something like 3-1. And so,
like 30-1.
You know, if you look at Karen DeWitt's reporting on the subject, it's very clear that those interest groups are not having a hard time.
Jesse and Kim, that's a lot of money on your side here.
I want to go back for a minute to the idea that no regressive amendments have ever been passed.
Okay.
Now I just want to say that in 1967, there was a regressive amendment. We tried to repeal the Blaine Amendment, which would give public funds to religious schools. Now, it did not pass. However, what I do want to say is I think that anyone on any side, any part of the political spectrum can say that we are at a time in our country when political ideology is very polarized. I have seen things happen this year since our last presidential election that I never thought I would see happen. And I don't think we can say, since there's never been any regressive changes to Constitution in the past, we can say, so it won't happen now, because I didn't ever think I would see a reality TV star become the president of the United States, and that's what I'm seeing now.
Well, you're proving Wes's point. The fact that first of all, that a repeal of the Blaine Amendment was, many people think, was put in there specifically as a poison pill to make sure that the Constitution went down. There were two fatal flaws in 67. One was putting the whole thing in front of it as take it or leave it, and the second was including the Blaine Amendment, a repeal of the Blaine Amendment, and that's what killed that constitutional convention. Despite that, despite the money that was spent on the convention, there were about five or six proposed amendments in that constitution that ultimately made their way into the legislature, and they made their way because of the work that was done in developing those amendments in the convention.
All right, so let me just jump in here. Yeah. I'm going to try to answer a few more listener questions. We'll come back to your phone calls. John writes to the program and wants to know, is there a provisional agenda of items that would be addressed by a constitutional convention? The answer is no. It's pretty much wide open there, John. That's part of this debate here. And Vicky says, no constitutional convention right now. The political atmosphere in this country is toxic. People are not just holding different views. They're holding extreme, diametrically opposing views with no middle ground to be found. This exists right here in New York as well as in Washington. But Robert in Fairport on the phone has a different view. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, it's a good discussion, but New York State has the most calcified government in the entire country. Almost nothing changes. We have two houses of government, the Assembly and the Senate, that, to be honest with you, do we really need two bodies like this that essentially almost cancel each other out? We badly need term limits. The complexity of the way the state is run is insane. I just think that we need to open ourselves up to the possibility of change. And people saying that, you can change it just by voting other people in office. That's just not going to happen.
All right. Robert, let me ask you, because that's the point that Jesse and Kim have been raising, that if you want change, we need people to run for office, not just to run for delegate in the convention, but we need people to get off the sidelines and run for office. And you seem cynical about that idea. Why?
Because the percentage of people that are incumbents that get elected is probably 95%. When they're in office, they have the full faith. They're able to use their franking privileges to send out mailings before the election on the taxpayer dime that are disguised, it's supposedly news, but it's actually, they're basically election pieces and stuff. It's very difficult for anybody new to get a spot in government in the first place, and there is so little change. I mean, every year you see these elections locally, and how many times does a newcomer actually get elected?
All right, so, Robert, thank you. I'm going to take Robert's phone call, and I'm going to turn to Jesse Lenny, and I'm going to piggyback off of Robert. So what Jesse Lenny said earlier as the regional political director for the Working Families Party is that let's not do a constitutional convention. Let's get more people to actually run and to make these changes. There's a chicken and an egg thing here. Robert is saying until we open up the rules and change those rules, we're going to have incumbents dominate. And the public knows that, which is why they don't run for these offices. So if you do a constitutional convention, you change some of the rules, whatever those rules are, and you make it more egalitarian, more reachable, more achievable, you take away those protections for incumbents, then in the future, you get more people to run for office. Why not?
Yeah, what we're saying is that it's virtually the same rules for the convention. It's the same cost. It's the same, you have to petition. It's the same process, recruiting candidates for the convention. I mean, we've just been accused of defeatism. So, yes, we think trying to elect 204 progressives to a convention is difficult. But the real defeatism is when you say we can't elect two or three people to the state Senate. That we're not saying we're not going to try. We're just going to say we want to try over here. We want to focus on the very, very best candidates. And we want to win a few elections. So I just feel like there's no magic about the convention. It's the same process. You have to buy the same mail to convince people to vote for you, introduce yourself. So I don't see what... I just get a sense that on the pro side, there's like the conventions, there's some kind of magic that there isn't. It's going to be run just like the legislature.
It won't
probably
be.
By the legislature.
Neil, you think it won't be, Neil?
No, I mean, it's the same process in terms of electing delegates, but a convention is far different from the legislature. It's unicameral. You don't have two houses that have to agree together. It's a single purpose. The people that go for it are not interested in reelection. The convention will be held, and it'll be done with. There are no seniority rules for leadership. The membership will be diverse if we elect the right people to it. You can't give favors to people for future elections and this, that, and the other. It's a whole different kind of a deliberative body that has a single purpose, and the focus will be on that purpose.
But I think that also begs the question of, if someone's not worrying about getting reelected, then what is holding them to doing what they said they were going to do in the first place?
Well, maybe people are willing to put in a year, but not willing to put in a life.
So let's say that I was someone who ran because I had some, you know, cause that I was really feeling very strongly about. And then I got to Albany and some special interest group decided they were going to try to buy me off. Now, I personally know that I wouldn't be able to be bought off, but I'm not sure that all the delegates that we send will be able to do that. And I think that at least if we're putting in, like Jesse said, the very best people who are thinking about their constituents and reelection, we can hold their feet to the fire and we can say, and if you don't do what we want you to do, us, the people who you represent, we will vote you out.
Okay. Wes, go ahead, then we'll get back to the phones.
So one of the biggest problems in American politics is that we run legislative elections and we have what's called a district magnitude of one, that the highest vote getter wins all the spoils of that victory. I don't think that the Constitutional Convention is magic, but what I do think will happen is that we'll have the district magnitude of two, which means that the second and third place finishers in each district, oftentimes folks who couldn't win in a regular single winner district, right? They will end up with a seat at the Constitutional Convention. And so what baffles me is that some of the folks, in particular progressives, who can't win in regular legislative elections are, I think, well poised to pick up some delegates here. And so it's not magic. It's that the district magnitude is three and not one.
And by the way, you don't vote for slates for the delegates, even though the parties will put up slates.
It's the top three vote getters.
You can vote for them individually. You can vote for somebody on the
But they don't, they're not
ticket.
Listed as a block.
They'll probably be listed as under the party. But you can vote for a Republican. You can vote for
okay.
a Democrat.
Can
you
now.
Can vote for a working family
you
person.
You can do that now.
Okay. And yeah. Jesse, quickly,
just,
go
just
ahead.
Quickly. I mean, we run elections. We have experience with at-large elections, too. So in at-large elections, we just had one in Rochester. I think all but one were incumbents who won. It's the same math. So, yes, they're a little bit more chaotic. They're way more expensive, just for the record. But there's no difference. And I don't want to keep picking on Senator Funky, but in Senator Robach's district, there are not just Senator Robach. There are two assembly members. There are six supervisors, town supervisors. There are two or three city council members. So if you don't think they can find three or four people to run, then that's a mistake. It will be much harder for us to find.
I can think of some good town board members that and supervisors that will be good delegates.
All right, I'm going to get back to the phones. Blaine.
More politicians.
Blaine and Henrietta. Go ahead, Blaine.
Yes, hi. First, I have to apologize for changing my question.
That's
the,
okay.
The panelists just killed that one before the break. I'd like to ask the panelists on each side to answer if it's safe to say that this is really a working class versus political politicians argument, with the working class being behind the no vote. That seems to be confirmed by the job descriptions of the panelists today and the vast array of typically opposed groups that have aligned around the no vote.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Blaine. Let's go around the table here. Kim?
I think the caller brings up a point that I would have wanted to bring up myself, is that if you look at the groups, I mean, we've talked about the very many groups, 200, more than 200 and counting, that are against the Constitutional Convention, and you're going to see groups that cross the entire spectrum. There's Democrats, there's Republicans, there's conservatives and progressives, there's single issue groups.
Planned Parenthood and the NRA?
Planned Parenthood and the NRA. There's environmental groups, there's religious coalitions. The coalition of people who are against this, I've heard the argument a few times that the politicians are against this, so it must be good. The politicians, I think, are the least important people who are against this. It's regular people. You know, my neighbors see my Constitutional Convention, no to the Constitutional Convention sign every day. I'm a regular person. I'm a school teacher. I teach elementary school kids every day. I am a working class person who sees this as being a negative in my life. And I think the wide array of people on the political spectrum who oppose this should be very telling to listeners.
All right. So, Wes?
I absolutely agree that the wide array of forces opposed to this should be telling to the voters. But I would argue that the logic is very much inverted. Almost everybody who's opposed to this is an interest group of some shape or stripe, be it the Sierra Club or the NRA or Planned Parenthood. And the folks who are generally supportive and advocating for the Constitutional Convention are good government groups. We're talking about the NRA and Planned Parenthood and the Sierra Club versus the League of Women Voters. And I think that's the fundamental way that we should think about the choice for or against the Constitutional Convention.
Daniel on Twitter, and I'm going to kick this over to Jesse and Kim. He says, if we don't get money out of politics, we won't be able to change anything else. There's only one way to do that, a constitutional convention. Jesse, the first part, do you agree money is too prominent in politics and do we need to get money out of politics?
I think it's too prominent, but I think, I mean, the voters have the power to overcome the money. If people educate themselves, I mean, I said this on the show and maybe I'm, this is where I become an idealist.
Is that idealism and not pragmatism, though?
It's idealism,
well,
right.
Thank you, Jesse. That means we could win.
We can also, our candidates can also do what we could do what we're doing. We are training candidates, even people who might be interested, aren't sure they're going to run, how to raise money, how to talk to voters. People can learn, people can run for town board, learn how to raise money. There's a ton of money on the progressive side. We just have to, we have to do our job.
But
and you don't need to raise as much money as they do. You just need to raise enough money to
but
win.
But I think, forget trying to raise and outspend. I think what Daniel's saying is he wants to hold a different system, probably public financing.
To the second point, I think the Constitutional Convention is a worse way to get the reforms that the advocates want to get. The current process that we're already paying for is the way to do it. And it's a cheaper way to do it, and it's a way we actually have the ability to do it. The distinction between the groups isn't working class versus elitist. It's who does elections and who doesn't. The people who do elections are afraid we can't win 204 elections next year, and the ones who don't do elections are like magic will happen, and the elections will be different than they've always been.
So lessening the power of money, whether it's through public financing or otherwise, is a good goal, and the worst way to do that is a constitutional convention. That's how you feel.
We advocate for public financing of elections. We pay for everything else in government. The only thing we let the corporations pay for is picking who makes all the
decisions. But you don't think a constitutional convention is a good way to do that?
No, it's a bad
way. Wes and Neil, do you think, Neil, I think you think that's a good way to do that.
Yeah, it's the only way to do it. If you think the legislature will do it, you're kidding yourself. The legislature is not going to develop strong ethics. The legislature is not going to loosen ballot access. The legislature is not going to have a truly independent redistricting commission rather than the kind of bipartisan fake one that they've put into the Constitution. They're not going to reform the court system, which will save the state $500 million per year, about 10 times the cost of the convention. They're not going to change the budgeting process so that it's logical and transparent. The only way these things are going to get done is through a convention. And the only reason that we have this coalition of so many people that are against it is because they've been scared by saying they're going to take away your pension, which is false. They're going to take away your labor rights, which is false. They're going to come up with a forever. They're going to take away Forever Wild, which is false.
I just wonder how you know that's false.
Because the citizens of New York would never, just as they wouldn't accept the repeal of the Blaine Amendment, they will never accept any constitution that has any of these kinds of things in it.
I don't feel confident that I have that assurance.
Yeah, that's a distinction.
And even if the citizens did enact a regressive constitution, that is why we have representative democracy. I guess I would also like to point out that so many of the articles in the current state constitution that folks are purporting to say are so sacred and that they want to defend ended up there because of a constitutional convention. And so this whole, I think, question is really about self-interest on the part of special groups or interest groups versus good governance. It's about folks who are afraid of losing what they already have versus the possibility of making some reforms. I don't think that this is a perfect system, but I would argue that this is certainly a better system than what's in place now because Albany is not fixing problems like corruption, like redistricting.
All right, so 30 seconds, Kim. Go, 30 seconds for your final thoughts. Go ahead.
I'm much more concerned about the very important protections that I'm going to, I could possibly lose. I don't feel.
As a teacher.
As a teacher and as a taxpayer and as a resident of New York State. I don't feel as confident as Neil and
Wes
do about about what is and is not going to be touched in the Constitution, and I don't feel as confident that we're going to be able to get non-political hacks as our delegates. If I had a crystal ball and could say that all of those things, we could get some great delegates and we could leave all the protections that we enjoy in our Constitution, then I would be right next to you guys saying that we can do it. But the huge question mark we're facing with this Constitutional Convention makes me a solid no.
Too much risk.
Too much risk.
Neil, 30 seconds. Final thoughts. Go ahead.
Just that I have the opposite position. I think it is possible to elect delegates to do these things. If the folks that are against the convention would have spent that time and energy and money next year in going for delegates that can do the kinds of things we want them to do, we can have a very good convention and we can have a very good state.
I think you heard this hour at least a forthright and stern discussion of the issues from both sides, and I'm grateful to all of our guests, Kim Chesko, a public school teacher, Jesse Lenny, Upstate Regional Political Director of the Working Families Party. On the no side, thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Neil Jasek, Chairman of the Government Reform Committee for the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester, and Wes Renfro, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College. On the yes side, thanks to Wes and Neil as well. Thanks, guys. Short break. More connections coming up. November 7th. Vote.